This podcast was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 33. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Joining us today is John Skurto. John is 21 years old, and he is currently a senior at Florida Atlantic University in Boca Raton, majoring in business management and minoring in leadership studies. John was diagnosed with SMA in 2017, and he also wrote an article which was recently published in the MDA Quest magazine. John, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin.
Absolutely. Really excited about this one, and I think we have a lot to discuss here. So before we get started, for our listeners out there, if you could just listen to this brief word from our sponsors.
Are you interested in understanding gene therapy? ExploreGeneTherapy.com has helpful information about gene therapy, including its history and how it is being investigated for the treatment of genetic diseases. Visit www.exploregenetherapy.com.
All right. Well, John, I wanted to start just by asking about your diagnosis story, which I think is really unique because, as I mentioned in the intro there, you're 21, but you were not diagnosed with SMA officially until just 2 years ago. So can you talk about that and, you know, why you were diagnosed so late and just the backstory there?
Absolutely. So my parents discovered that I had weakened limb muscles and was not really meeting the milestones that I should be meeting as a baby, so they decided to do a genetic testing because doctors believed that I had SMA. So we did a genetic test in 1998, which came back negative, and then we later did another genetic testing back in 2003, which again came back negative. So at that point, we just decided to live our lives and not really worry about what the name of the condition that I had was. So we knew it was some form of muscular dystrophy, but we didn't know it was SMA. Doctors always believed it was SMA, but genetic testing came back negative twice. So after the announcement of Spinraza being approved by the FDA, we thought that it would be a good time to get another genetic test. So after the announcement of Spinraza being approved by the FDA, we decided that it would be a great time to get another genetic test since scientific technology has improved. So I went to my neurologist and we did a genetic testing for SMA, and this time it came back positive. I have a heterozygous case of SMA, which only 3% of people who have SMA are heterozygous. So I have a copy of SMN1, but unfortunately there's a mutation on that copy, so it does not work like it should. So because of that, I have SMA.
That's crazy. It's just fascinating. So because of that one mutation, you have it, but it's a very... So, like, did they even give you a type of SMA that you had, or it's just...
Yeah, so rare. I'm a type 2.
You are type 2, okay, yeah. That's just fascinating, because it's interesting because, you know, I've had other people on the podcast who are, you know, older generations, and they got misdiagnosed or didn't really know what they had, but that was just because the technology back then, when they were kids, was available and not really... People really didn't know what SMA was. It's just fascinating that, I mean, you're younger than I am, and you got it misdiagnosed, so it's amazing how that all works. But on that note then, so, you know, growing up with a disability, knowing that you had one and knowing that you had some kind of form of muscular dystrophy, but not knowing what it was, what was that like for you? Just your general experience of that kind of, like, the identity aspect, and then just growing up with a disability.
I would say as a kid, it didn't really bother me because I honestly felt like in my mind that I didn't really have a disability. I just saw myself as a regular kid or a person who just so happened to use a wheelchair to get around. And I may need help with things from time to time, but other than that, I felt like any other kid. I would say as I got older, I became maybe a little bit more curious because I do see that, like, scientific advancements are taking place. So what if there was a treatment or some sort of cure for my condition that may have been out there that I didn't even know really was for me, for my condition? But I would say now that I am diagnosed with SMA, it was actually like, I would say I'm actually very blessed that I know now because I'm able to be on a treatment for SMA. So not many conditions are even able to have treatments to help people who need them.
Right, right. Well, and on that note, you know, like, what has your experience been like with Spinraza?
With Spinraza, I would say it's been a pretty good experience overall. I definitely feel stronger. I feel like I'm not getting weaker, so that's definitely the goal.
Right, right. When did you start it, the process? Because, like, it's interesting that the announcement of Spinraza is what sparked, really, your diagnosis, you know? And so, once you did officially get the diagnosis, did you start the treatment not long after that, or was it more a recent thing?
So the announcement came out December 23rd, and I saw my neurologist in April. We did the genetic testing. The results came back in June, and the same day that he shared the results with me, I gave him my short form to start Spinraza that same day. So I handed in the form in June, and I received my first injection November 1st of 2017.
Wow. That's just crazy, the turnaround there. It's like you went from not even knowing exactly what you had to being on the treatment for it a few months later.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It was a very stressful and rough year because it was definitely a big decision to even start Spinraza. But at the same time, to also find out your diagnosis after almost 20 years, it was definitely a very stressful time. But it was also great that I even had the opportunity to make a decision to be on a treatment because, like I said before, there are other conditions that don't have that opportunity.
Oh, I can only imagine, because it's like, I mean, I think about it from my perspective, and it's funny, we started our treatments the exact same time. I started November of 2017 as well. But for me, it was like, it was a very stressful time, and this is something I've written about a lot, where the lead up to my first injection was very stressful because, I mean, obviously I was happy that a treatment existed and that people were seeing positive results from it. But like for me personally, I wasn't sure if it would be the right one for me or if like it was worth it just because it was such a time consuming process and that there was potential side effects. And that alone was enough stress for me. But to have that on top of just receiving your official diagnosis, that's got to be a whirlwind of just emotions and everything.
Well, I would say in addition to that, another very stressful thing was I have a spinal fusion also.
Right, so, I do too, yeah.
Yeah, so I actually did a laminectomy, which is basically a surgery to remove a little piece of bone to create a window for me to get the lumbar punctures. So I had to, not only did I have to make a decision to do Spinraza, I also had to make a decision on how to overcome that roadblock. So I ultimately decided that I wanted to do the surgery, and I did the surgery in September, and I ran into some complications with the surgery, which delayed my treatment about a month and a half. So I started November 1st, and unfortunately, I did the first injection November 1st, and I, the next day, experienced some very severe symptoms. So I went to the ICU, well, I went to the hospital, I'm sorry, and the doctors believed that I caught an infection from my first injection. They think that I caught bacterial meningitis. So because of that, I had to basically be in the ICU for about 6 days, and my second loading dose was delayed about a month and a half.
Wow, that's crazy. And I've heard this story before too, because I know other people who have been in the same boat of like having to do the lumbar puncture. And I was fortunate enough to, I get mine through cervical injections, so like a shot in my neck, and which sounds scarier than it is, but it's actually worked out really well for me. But it's crazy. Like, I've heard people who have been in your situation as well, and I can't imagine. That's why I was so stressed about going to the injection, and to have that on top of everything else, that's crazy. But so that was, 2017 was a pretty whirlwind of a year for you.
Yeah, it was a very good year, a very stressful year as well.
I bet. Wow. But so then in the, after all that, and once you did recover and started the process, you mentioned like, not getting weaker. Have you seen any other effects of the treatment since starting it?
Yeah, so I actually lost the ability to place my own hand on the joystick to operate my wheelchair. About, I would say, when I started the treatment, it was 5 years prior. So back in 2012 or 2013, I lost that ability. And after my fourth and final loading dose, the next day, I was able to place my own hand on my joystick to drive my chair. And I wasn't able to do that for the past 5 years. And ever since that day, I have been able, pretty much every day, multiple times per day, I'm able to do that now.
That's awesome. And it's things like that that, like, you know, it for people like you and me, you know, who are a bit older, young adults with SMA, you know, it's hard to quantify some of those things. Like, it's, we feel great when we're on the treatment, but it's, you know, I mean, we're not going to be walking or doing these crazy things, but things like that is what makes a world of difference in our lives, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, any little benefit is a huge benefit.
Yeah.
Just to have that independence of not having to ask somebody to put my hand on my joystick is really amazing.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad, you know, it worked out after that whole, just, you know, many bumps in the road and all the things you had to go through, but I'm glad it's worked out now. So shifting gears then a little bit, the other thing I want to talk to you about is the article you wrote for the NBA Quest magazine. So this article is called What Happened to You? And it, which I love the title because it's addressing a question that any wheelchair user gets all the time. And that's, you know, people see us and they ask, you know, what happened? And so you're commenting on that idea. And also you touched on this earlier, but kind of about your growing up with a disability and how it affected you more as you got older. So could you talk just a little bit about this article and where the inspiration came for it and kind of the ideas you explore in it?
Absolutely. So basically, this article was a class project. I'm doing a minor in leadership studies at FAU. And there was a capstone class, which basically was pretty, like, the professor allowed us to do anything we wanted related to leadership. So I was deciding, like, what should I do for this project? Should I work on an article or a documentary? Like, I wanted to do something that highlighted my disability and also leadership. Because I feel like anybody can be a leader, whether or not they're disabled or not disabled. So I eventually decided to write this article to promote disability awareness, as well as touching on the topic that anybody can go through hard times or rough circumstances and overcome, but not even overcome, but also have a different mindset and be able to, I guess, manage those circumstances to live their best life and to maybe inspire others to also live their best life.
Absolutely. And I really like the examples you use in the article, because you talk about how, you know, you were pretty isolated in high school, but then once you got to college, you used, you were ready to branch out and experience more social situations, and leadership really helped you do that, and you got involved in different organizations. What was the first organization you got involved in when you were in college, and what was that experience like?
So the first organization I got involved in was called Emerging Young Leaders. And Emerging Young Leaders was a program to introduce freshman students to the topic of leadership. So I actually got paired up with a mentor who was a really amazing individual who was a great friend, because back in high school, I didn't really have any friends who I socialized with on a day-to-day basis. So to have him was a really great transition to college. And he was involved in a lot of organizations on campus. During my freshman orientation, I became really inspired by this other leadership program called Elite Owls. And Elite Owls are basically leadership and service ambassadors who do leadership workshops on campus. We have two leadership conferences, so we create workshops for those conferences for students at FAU. And my mentor was also an Elite Owl, so it inspired me even more to develop my leadership skills so I can eventually become an Elite Owl. So I basically, since freshman orientation, my goal was to always become an Elite Owl, because I saw how passionate they were on the stage promoting leadership, and they just had really good energy. And that's what I wanted for myself.
That's really cool. And I know for me, getting involved in campus life was instrumental to my college experience, and it's what I tell just any college student is, you know, classes are obviously foundational, but, you know, the minute you get involved in the things you love and meet people like that, it just changes your whole world, so that's really cool. Well, then on that note, too, of just, like, talking about college and the transition, so I want to ask you just about, you know, about living, are you going to college, you know, do you live on campus? Do you have caregivers? What's been your setup, and what do you do currently?
So I actually live at home with my parents. I have nursing throughout the day, so I go to school with my nurse. And, yeah, I have a note-taker at school for note-taking. They basically, they work for the accessibility office on campus, and they come to all my classes and take my notes for me.
I actually had the same setup, so that's really cool. We also had an accessibility services office that provided that as well. And then I lived at home throughout college and just, you know, had people drive me and had care throughout the day. So that's really cool. Along the lines of that, even though, you know, you live at home with your parents, but, like, what was the transition like of, you know, going from high school where you have an aide with you all day to, I know you still have aides here, but, like, you know, bigger campus and just learning the ins and outs of all that. What was the initial transition like for you?
I would say the transition wasn't too bad, actually. I think that college is a lot more freedom and you're able to make your own schedule. So I created all my schedules every semester. I would do half of my classes online and the other half in person, which gave me flexibility to do more things on campus and get involved in organizations. So, you know, in high school, you go to school 5 days a week, maybe like 8 hours a day or 7 hours a day. Actually, over my time at FAU, I never went to school 5 days a week. I tried to stick with maybe 2 to 3 days a week. sometimes it was only one day a week, which really gave me that free time I needed to do really well with my classes and to also get involved on campus, which I feel is a huge part of going to college. Me personally, I would say I developed myself more through the organizations that I've decided to join over the academic courses that I took.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. I mean, it's just getting involved. And I had a similar setup as well, because a lot of times I didn't have classes on Fridays. And just that extra day does wonders, because you can use it to get stuff done or hang out with friends, get involved in things. And it's the best thing about college is that flexibility. So that's really cool. Do you do any online classes too?
Yeah. Half of my classes are online.
Yeah.
And my school actually offers a really cool feature. So they record some of the classes are all called, I'm sorry, I'm going to redo that.
Oh, it's all good. Break it down.
So at FAU, they offer some classes in the video streaming format. And video streaming is really cool because these classes allow you to watch them at any time. So let's say you can also attend the in-person class. So let's say, for example, the class is on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't actually have to attend the live class. You can either watch it online on your computer at that time, or you can watch it at a later time, which really provides a lot of flexibility in my case, because I do a lot of medical treatments and that kind of stuff in the morning. So that really helped me a lot.
Right. Yeah, no, it's like, the flexibility is great. And that's really cool that they offer that program specifically. Cool. Well, another thing I wanted to ask you about was, right before we started the interview, you mentioned that you were also on the board for Laughing at My Nightmare, which is the organization started by SMA blogger Shane Burkall. Can you talk about how you got involved with that organization and what you do for them?
Absolutely. So I discovered Shane Burkall after becoming diagnosed with SMA. I read his book called Laughing at My Nightmare, which was an amazing book, really funny, and he provided great insight about what his life was like living with SMA. And after reading his book, I felt like we both had very similar lives, and there's actually somebody out there who was going through the same experiences that I was going through, which I thought was pretty cool to know that. So ever since then, I became a big follower of him and his foundation, and they were actually looking for board of directors, and I applied to be on the board, and I was very grateful to be accepted. So I started in January of this year, and I'm actually on the committee called No More Nightmares, which basically that committee, they provide medical equipment to people with muscular dystrophy.
That's really cool. Yeah, no, I followed Shane for a while, and I interviewed him on the show a few months ago, and I remember, posts he's done about getting adaptive vans for families and that kind of thing, but that's really cool. Like, what's kind of the process for, like, when you're on that committee, do you, meet, like, a few times a month over Skype, or how does that work?
Yes, we have board meetings each quarter, and even though we only have meetings each quarter, we're all very, we're like a big family. We definitely communicate pretty often, whether it's through email or through video conferences. And, we're really working on a lot of exciting stuff. We actually have a 5K coming up in June on the 22nd, which will be a pretty great event, and we're really looking forward to it.
That's really cool. I follow them all the time, so I look forward to seeing, what projects you have in the works. But And actually, on that note, so, you know, you're doing a lot of things. You're in your last full semester of college, and you've got all these initiatives going on. What do you, and I know it's maybe hard to answer because you're an entrepreneur, but what are your plans for the future, like post-graduation?
So post-graduation, my plans, so I'll be graduating in August with my bachelor's in business administration, and I'm actually planning on getting my MBA, my master's in business administration, and I'd like to start that program next year. And after I get my MBA, I guess we'll just see what happens after that. I definitely really like business, and I would hopefully want to work in the business management field.
That's really cool. Well, and I mean, with your experience, I mean, the possibilities are endless, so that's really cool.
Yeah, and that's actually one reason why I chose business as a major, is because I didn't want to limit myself to careers, because of having a physical disability, there's only so much that I'm able to physically do. But I feel like with a business management degree, I can pretty much enter any field. So I definitely like the flexibility that I have with that degree.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was a humanities major as well, so you get a lot more options. And I mean, yeah, I had no idea that I would be working for a company like BioNews, but that's the thing. It's just a matter of just getting those skills and being able to do all kinds of things with them. So that's really cool. But well, on that note, too, just think, as we wrap up here, and you've been through, you've been involved in multiple things, and you've been in advocacy organizations and businesses, but what advice do you have for other people with disabilities, whether it's people with SMA or maybe another form of muscular dystrophy? In all the things you've learned in your experience, what are some things you want to say to people out there?
So I would say my biggest advice to give to people who have muscular dystrophy, or in that note, really any person, we all have a story to share. We all have our own life experiences and the circumstances that we face. Everybody is different. So I feel like we can all grow and learn from each other if we just share our stories. Before being diagnosed with SMA, I never really even spoke about my disability. But now I'm making more of an effort to talk about my story and my journey, because I want to educate people and inspire them to just be yourself with the life that you have, and to do great things, ultimately. So that's why I wrote this article called What Happened to You. And if you haven't read it yet, I encourage you all to please just take a look at it. And I hope it inspires you, personally.
Absolutely. And we'll definitely link that article into the podcast or on the forums. But absolutely. Well, yeah, John, that's great advice. And I just want to thank you for coming on today and sharing your story. This has been a great conversation. So.
I'm really honored to be on the podcast. So thank you so much, Kevin. It really means a lot to me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Very cool. Awesome. Well, yeah, I hope to see your name in print again in the future, which I'm sure it will be. But
yeah, this was my first publication, and I'm really hoping that there will be many more in the future. I definitely have a lot more stories to share with the world.
Absolutely. Well, John, thanks again. And for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. All episodes are available on Spotify, iTunes, and right here on our website at smanewstoday.com. You can also connect with us directly on our forums page and check out our other multimedia content, such as the SMA News Today YouTube channel. I'm Kevin Schaefer, and we will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcasts and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. And be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. For SMA News Today, I'm Michael Morale, Multichannel Content Director.